The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That became my goal, to be able to say that and mean it.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're in LifeWord Studios, broadcasting in over 170 languages, 127 countries, to a listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our Christian content at lifeword.org. This episode today is kind of a part two of our episode, the last episode with Timothy Walker. We have him again here with us today. So, Timothy, it's good to have you here with us again on the show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I understand that what we are going to be talking today is a very fresh and raw subject. And to our listeners, it may be something that is very difficult to hear, especially if they have lost a child. But there was a very unique situation that took place with your son, Miles. As I understand, Miles was autistic. Is that right? Or
he was born with brain damage as a result of oxygen deprivation at birth.
Okay.
Which manifested like autism.
Okay. So I'll just give the overview and then we can get into it. So Miles was 20. How old was he?
Well, he would be 35 this year, so he would have been
31, 32-ish, something there. Yeah. So in the middle of COVID, your wife was working. She mentioned on the last episode you were disabled, so you're in the home. And there came a point in time where people had to go back to work, or they had jobs that they had to be there for, and your wife had one of those type of jobs.
I'm going to need to back up
just a little bit.
This was in 2020.
Okay.
So this was right when COVID hit.
Okay.
And we were just learning about, and they were just saying, oh, maybe wear a mask and just, but not, you know, nothing really in place.
Sure. So. Sure. But there was the mandate that if you're sick, don't come to work, don't be around people.
Right.
Quarantine yourself. You know, that's too much of a risk. Your wife working was exposed to COVID by a coworker who knew they were sick, but came to work anyway. Mm-hmm. And so then COVID was brought into your home, and I'm going to let you kind of pick it up from there.
Okay. Well, I had COVID. Carol got it and thought she was dying. She couldn't get out of bed. I caught it and had a headache. Miles caught it. We both thought it would be just, you know, fairly mild or whatever. And December 23rd of 2020, we had to have an ambulance come get him. And December 27th, 4:47 in the morning, he died of COVID pneumonia. And I mean, that's going to be traumatic for any parent.
Sure.
But Miles had been the very center of our lives since birth because of his disabilities. So all of a sudden that was gone. There was no longer any center to our marriage. Now, for a believer, for a pastor to say those kind of things, people are going to go, well, that's not right. Well, you know, it's easy to invest your heart and soul in your child when they are in such need.
Sure.
And there's no one else to do it. So, yes, God got shoved to the side.
Yeah, and there is in psychology, there is what is referred to as the parental-focused marriage. Mm-hmm. And you see it all the time. When the child goes off to college, the parents get divorced. You know, there's the only purpose of their marriage is for the child. And that happens more often than we would think. But we also know as believers, as pastors, we're not immune to any of that, especially when we do have a child that is so needs so much attention that we kind of forget what the marriage is about. But again, and no fault of your own, that's how that took place. Mm-hmm. So now you've lost Miles, and let's for a moment focus on the anger that immediately took place that started from the exposure in the workplace of where it was knowingly brought into the workplace that was then transferred into your home. So I remember there was a lot of anger there as it conferred to Miles' passing. Mm-hmm. How did you navigate that anger as a Christian? And I know that sometimes we don't handle things in a Christian manner. I understand that. But how did you navigate that?
Well, I have a shirt actually that says it on it. It says, I'm half Jesus and half Peter. Run up on me and see which half you get.
Yeah.
My response all my life has been anger, because that was the only, it was either that or such extreme happiness and joy that it frightened other people.
Sure.
I was angry at the lady. Carol was more so. But even more than that, I was angry at Mims, because we had called them out and they had told us he didn't need to be transported. And the next day we had to call him back and come get him. And then 4 days later, he was dead. So there was more, for me, there was more anger directed at them than anything else. And we took appropriate legal action. But that didn't fix it. You know, as far as that, it's still gone. It paid for some expenses. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it didn't fix anything. And the anger pretty early on just morphed into just deep, deep sadness. However, and I think because I was on, for the first time, Lamictal, the sunshine pill, it didn't turn into a depression, not like it would have before.
Sure.
I would not be here had that not, that medication not been in place. I have no doubt of that. But I'm still here. God's not done with me yet. Also, as a believer, and I'm just going to throw this out there, and people can do with it what they will. My life is not my own. It's bought and paid for. A heavy price was paid for my life. It's not mine to take. It's mine to give, but it's not mine to take. So, but at the same time, I can say that and still see how a believer could find themselves in a position of wanting to take their life.
Yeah.
Knew an older gentleman. He and his wife had been married for 50 years, I think. His wife died, and a week later, he took his own life. He could not live without her.
Yeah.
And that's what it seemed like with Miles. We just kind of wandered around there for a while.
I have a good friend that lost one of his boys, and his boy was 4 or 5 years old. And it was due to some negligence on his part before he ever even got married or had a son. He had a tree that fell in a storm and they didn't clean it up. And it, you know, the big mud hole from the root ball falling out. His boy was going after a ball and fell in that and drowned. And he really struggled with that for a while. But then he came to this revelation and he said, I was so angry at God for taking my child. He said, but God spoke to me and told me he was never mine to begin with. And it's difficult for us to think that way. But that's what gets us through these moments, is that they were on loan to us. You know, they were never ours. And so as you dealing with that loss there, how did that affect your relationship with Christ?
I think the book of Job is probably the most honest, if you can say this, the most honest book in the Bible for believers, because he has everything taken from him.
Yeah.
Evidently, except the negative things in his life, which is a whole nother thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he has everything taken from him. And yet I believe there's something about repenting in sackcloth and ashes. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. When Miles passed, that became my goal, to be able to say that and mean it. Because people, you say a lot of stuff, but actually meaning it, it's a whole different animal.
Yeah. I remember there was a time in my life where there was a lot of hurt done to me by a specific individual. And I knew I was to forgive them, but I didn't want to forgive them. The flesh wouldn't allow me to forgive them. And the piece of advice that I got from my pastor at that time was, say, Brian, when you pray, you tell God that you know you're supposed to forgive them and you do forgive them, but you know I don't mean it. Just be honest with God. Say, I know that I'm supposed to, and I say it, but you know that I don't mean it. And the more that you pray that, the more the Holy Spirit will convict and soften your heart to be able to forgive. And it took, you know, 6-8 months, but the Lord in his grace gave me the grace to be able to forgive. And, you know, I think it's important, you know, and I'll let you speak to this, but as Christians, we are supposed to forgive, but that doesn't mean that we always immediately do, or that we have the ability to immediately do those things. And so in losing your child, yeah, we want to, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, and we want to give it to God, but that doesn't mean that we immediately are able to do those things. And it's okay for it to be a process.
Last year was the first time that I could say, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord, and say it honestly without too much pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't expect it to fix overnight. Number one, it's not going to fix.
Yeah.
Accept that right off the bat. There's no way you can fix that.
Yeah.
Go ahead and get mad at God. He can handle it. He handled the cross. He can handle your little bit of being mad at him. Seek comfort from him and from people around you that you trust. If you don't have people around you that you trust, find a church, find a pastor that'll talk to you by yourself and see if he can help.
You know, I hate to say one of my famous quotes, but maybe my most quoted quote is, and I know that I've shared this with you before, is however you feel, it's okay to feel that way because God made you to have feelings, but don't unpack and live there. If you're mad at God, tell him you're mad at him. You know, we see plenty of times in the Bible where people were mad at God and they told him they were mad. He didn't smite them. You know, he had grace and he had mercy. And you know, I would just say for our listeners, these people that tell you, hey, you've got to forgive and you've got to do that and you've got to do it now, they don't know what they're talking about because they've not been through it. They don't understand the actual of what is going on in your body and in your mind and in your soul. And so the best thing to do in those situations is to find a pastor or a counselor or some person that has been through what you're going through, maybe not to the same extent or the same circumstances, but have dealt with those type of issues before. Because as you said, it rarely is going to happen immediately. Mm-hmm. So and now that you're able to look back and look at that situation and how God used that situation to give you an opportunity to minister, what is your perspective towards that now?
This may not make much sense, but still, every time I close my eyes, I see Miles' face as he's dying because they let us be in there.
Yeah,
they weren't doing that, if you remember, at that time. Then you couldn't go in. They would shut it off, but they let us in because of his disability. Every time I can see it, and I sense my failings and all those, I should have done this and I should have done that. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. But none of it changes anything.
Yeah.
He's still gone. Now, I know where he is, and I know I'll see him again. Doesn't help a whole lot down here sometimes. So realism has to enter into it, even for a believer. We know what our eternity is, but I don't know about you. My life didn't necessarily get any better on this earth by getting saved. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it might have gotten a little worse just because this world opposes us at every point. So the sadness is not gone. It's easier to deal with. I talk to Dad. I take the Abba very literally.
Yeah.
I talk to Dad all the time. I fuss at him. I complain. I love David. He's the biggest whiner. I'll tell you the biggest part, the worst part, if you will, of going through this and coming out now. And I think I figured out why it happens. When you lose someone in your family, and I've heard this from other people too, when you lose someone close like that, other people don't know what to say, and they don't know what to do. So they just quit talking to you and quit coming by. So for those of you that have lost someone, it's not that they don't love you. It's not that they don't care about you. It's that they just don't know what to do for you. And that makes them uncomfortable, and it makes them anxious, and it's a fight or flight kind of thing. And that's what people do. They're gonna flee.
And on the flip side of that, with probably 6-8 months ago, I went to a funeral of a young girl who was disabled, and her mother had taken care of her as a single mom for most of her life. And this person was comforting the mother and said, you know, she is in a much better place now. And the mother whipped her head around and said, what do you mean? You know, how dare you say that? And so, you know, we say things out of trying to console, but at the same time, it could be very detrimental to someone's healing process. And so my advice is always, if you don't know what to say, don't say anything. Just be present. You know, just be there.
Had a lady that I care very much about in church right after Miles passed, said, well, you know, God has a plan. And then she just walked off like she was embarrassed. Well, she was. She didn't know what to say. That was the only thing that came out of her mouth. And I think she knew it wasn't the right thing when she said it.
Yeah.
Don't expect people to be able to deal with your grief because they don't know what you're going through.
Right. Right.
You know.
And the most comfort that you'll find in those situations are the people who know what you're going through. You know, the Bible says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. It doesn't say, yea, though I bypass it, or the Lord picks me up by the scruff of the neck and puts me over the other side of it. We get through it.
Or I'm not camping out there.
Right, right. You know, and I hate, and I always correct when people say, well, they'll get over it. No, you don't get over it. You get through it. You get to the other side of it. What do you think was the most important piece that brought healing or started healing through this grief process?
Time. Time, the whole time heals all wounds, that's garbage. But it does. Okay. Saying I heard a long time ago, God will heal all wounds, but most wounds leave a scar. So I've got a lot of scars. Some of them still hurt, but they're not open wounds anymore. I can look back, not dispassionately, but I can look back at it without the depression, the mind-numbing sadness. And again, and this was from 2020 to now, it was just last year, probably about October, something like that, that I was able to say, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Yeah. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Yeah, you know, there's a song that says, Lord, heal the wound, but leave the scar. And it's something...
Never heard that one.
Yeah, and the next line is something of the sort that says, heal the wound, but leave the scar to show me the reminder of who you are, that you are the healer. I'm sure that you're familiar with the quote, people want to see your scars before they see your trophies. You know, this, again, may be a topic for a whole other show, but why is it that we as Christians can't just be vulnerable and be broken together? Why do we have to put up the facade that, you know, everything's perfect, everything's good with me? I know the answer, but what is your interpretation of that?
We are the only ones with that problem. Mm-hmm. You go to any other nation other than a European-based nation, mm-hmm. they don't have that problem. They weep over each other, over their sorrows. They laugh and rejoice over each other's happiness. I'm not going to say across the board. I wouldn't broad brush it that way. But by and large, they feel more free within their societal constraints to do that. We're very much a bootstrap society. You're on your own. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. It's been 5 years. Well, you ought to be over that by now, or 4 years. You ought to be over that by now. How dare you? How dare you? You don't know what I'm dealing with. And that comes back, and I'll just say to anyone that's listening that does not have this sort of loss but knows someone that has, don't leave them alone. Don't leave them alone. You may not see them again.
Yeah.
And I as I mentioned, I go for months at a time, and you know I'm home all the time. I go for months at a time without a phone call. Months at a time without a visit. Years at a time without a visit. And people forget because it's not their pain. You know, so, and I post a lot of stuff, as you've mentioned, You don't get near as much as everyone else does. I spare you that. But that's part of it, is trying to reach out to others,
sure,
hoping for a response, and it never comes.
Yeah.
So my only hope is in the Lord.
I think that somewhere down the line, we hung on to this false doctrine that if our lives aren't perfect, that we're not close to God and our faith isn't what it should be. And so we put up this facade of everything is perfect because we don't want anybody to look down on us, which then leads to guilt. And as you very well know, the cure for guilt is confession, and not just to the Father, but to everybody. You know, this is, hey, this is what's going on in my life. And, you know, I've had people tell me, one group of people say, hey, preacher, you shouldn't be so honest about some things, or maybe so transparent about some things. That I've had another group of people say, if I knew my preacher was going through that and he wasn't transparent about it, I'd leave the church because he wants me to be that transparent to him. And so there's this fine line that you have to walk that gets exhausting to walk. And so as a believer, which again, then can lead into that low mood, that sadness, then that clinical depression, you know, you just go down the rabbit hole. And so I think it's important. I'm very careful to say this, and hopefully this doesn't get cut out, but if you're going to a church where you have to continually put on a fake smile to feel like you belong, that's probably not the church you should be going to. Now let the Lord and the Holy Spirit give you that discernment, not me, but we have to go where we have community. We have to go where we're serving together, where we're bearing each other's burdens together. If you hurt, I hurt, you know, if you have joy, I have joy. And those kind of things. But, you know, it's very easy to sit back and look at everybody else. And I had a young lady, which you know the Waddells. Mm-hmm. I had a young lady tell me one time in my office, she said, if my life was like the Waddells, I would not be depressed. And I just had to look at her and go, you don't have any idea what their life is like.
Yeah.
Comparison is the thief of joy. Mm-hmm. And whenever we look at any situation, we begin to compare it. We're going to not turn out so well. As I already said, if you don't know what to say, don't say anything, but show up, be there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's as simple as somebody's lost their son or their daughter or a loved one, anybody that is grieving, just show up. And if the trash hadn't been taken out, go grab the trash and take it out.
Yes.
If the dishes haven't been done, don't ask, just go do it. 'Cause being present does more than anything for somebody who's grieving.
You don't know how many times that I have, or that we have sat in the house with light bulbs burned out that we couldn't reach, nobody to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Not saying we wouldn't have gotten a hold of you.
Yeah. Well, I've changed some light bulbs and some light switches. Well, I probably shouldn't say light switches, but
I've changed some bulbs.
Yeah.
But,
or it worked on a gas dryer one time, I think, for you, you know.
Oh, you just reattached.
Yeah, yeah.
Thing. Yeah. But yes, I mean, take some time out to clean their house, vacuum, sweep and mop.
Yeah.
Yeah, come over and do the dishes one day, because I guarantee you they're going to have a sink full.
And they're not going to realize that it's being neglected.
Yeah.
You know, the people who are in that grief, I dare say they don't even look to know that that's on a I need to do list. Mm-hmm. But then other people process grief other ways where their house is spotless and they have to be busy. Mm-hmm. And then I think about Mary and Martha, you know, the feet of Jesus worshiping in the kitchen doing the dishes. You know, people have two different ways of operating. And so, again, as we end this, what do we tell parents specifically who've lost children? What is the message to them to begin the healing process?
Find someone you trust to talk to. If you can't find anyone else, I recommend group therapy lastly, simply because I think one-on-one works better.
Mm-hmm.
Seek professional help. There's nothing wrong with it. If God didn't want us to have psychiatrists and psychologists, they would not exist. Either he's in charge or he isn't. Don't be afraid to be honest. You're going to run people off, but the people that really care, that are closest to you, they're not going anywhere. And as a believer, talk to God. Get mad at him. If you need to, cuss him. He's That's not going to go over well in some circles, but I'm just saying, if we're going to say be honest, if you can't be honest with God, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
As an unbeliever, the same way, be honest with him. He'll be honest with you. That's the way he works.
I heard a preacher say it this way: if you're mad at God, you might as well tell him, because he already knows. And if you don't tell him, you're lying. You know, so I'm a big, big advocate for telling God how you feel, because you're going to get more out of telling him how you feel than telling your wife or your friend or your, even your pastor.
I've been very glad we have cell phones, simply because I can now talk in the car with nobody else in there, and nobody thinks I'm nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you for being here with us today again and talking about the loss of a child and how to navigate through that. We have in the last episode and this episode touched a little bit on suicidal ideologies. If you or someone you know is a danger to themselves or others, we would encourage you to contact the authorities. If you are suicidal, you can call the National Suicide Hope Line. You can call or text 811 in the United States. I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at thedocbrian.com. And we're on LifeWord today, lifeword.org. You can find all of our Christian content there. I forgot how to speak now. LifeWord.org. You can find all of our Christian content there. Thank you so much for listening today, and we hope to see you again soon. Goodbye.